It's that time. Lock and load. The Michael Berry Show is on the air.
It's Charlie from Blackberry Smoke. I can feel a good one coming on. It's the Michael Berry Show.
Oh, yes, it is. It's a Friday drive home.
2 6-packs of Shiner. 99 cent butane lighter. Lucky Strikes and a fifth of Patron. Ice down that igloo cooler. Take a guess at all to do her. I can feel a good one coming on. Throw in Ray Wiley Hubbard. Sing along to Redneck Mother. Over, no chance of staying sober. I can feel a good one coming on. Yeah, we gonna roll all night. We gonna get the feeling right. We gonna keep this party rocking till the break of dawn. Yeah, I can feel a good one coming on. Top Mustang followed us down to the lake and didn't have to think about that too long. Skinny dipping in the bright moonlight, situation couldn't be more right. I can feel a good one coming on.
Tough times don't build character. They reveal it. I notice a lot about people during a time like we've been through after the election. I notice that people who had no involvement in the election, they're the grumpy, throw the hands down, I'm not participating crowd, are very eager to use this as an example of why you shouldn't even try. It's just amazing to me. How could you care so little about your country that your answer to this cancer is to simply let it grow? We did win in Texas statewide, every statewide official. Florida now, for the first time since 1870, every statewide official Republican. Iowa has swung more Republican. Seats were picked off in California and New York. A Republican majority was installed in the House. There are victories, plenty of them. And the losses are more unbearable because they matter so much. But I notice how many people are disengaged and yet very outspoken. And then I see how many people put on their chin strap, got to work, doing the things necessary, the X's and O's, the blocking and tackling to win elections. And I see them doing that all every day. And they're doing that in their personal lives as well as in your political and professional lives. Nurses and doctors and cops and firefighters and veterans, teachers. There are so many good people out there. It's important to remember this because I'll speak for myself so I don't have to drag you in. I've been very bitter and angry since last Tuesday night, especially because of the county that I live in, but because of losing the Senate. I've been very bitter and angry and difficult to be around. And I apologize to my family for that. I said, I got to get back to focusing on what's important. I care. I care a lot. I care so much about my country, my county, my state, my community, my neighbors, my children's future, that I do. I get very angry. And there's two things about the process, three things about the process that make me very angry. Number one is the cheating. I hate the cheating. I hated the cheating when I was a kid on the school. The hell was that? Ah, they're out to shut us down, Ramon. They knew I was on to something. They're shutting us down. I hated the cheating when I was in the schoolyard. I hated when I felt that a ref was out to get us. I hated when a baseball coach didn't have my kid who made the all-star team make the travel team because of some personal comments I learned he made later in his personal relationship. I hate that. It's wrong. In that case, it's wrong for the kid. I hate a bully. Because I hate to see someone being victimized by another person. I hate the destruction of the rule of law and the sense of order that makes things right. The world may be a broken place, but we strive to achieve that. I hate the cheating. I hate that the people who work so hard are deprived of what is rightfully theirs, which is a victory. I hate the inefficiency that builds into the system because the kinds of people who will cheat will govern poorly. And then I particularly hate those Republicans who will not speak up and speak out, but will quietly amble on down the road because they can't handle the confrontation.
Ladies, make yourself useful and grab your fella or girlfriend a beer. Pop and Top is right around the corner on the Friday Drive Home edition of The Michael Berry Show.
Well, it's Friday evening, 6 o'clock, and all my friends are twisting off. I'm at the house just turning on TV. Well, they all wonder why I've changed. How many times must I explain? It's basic honky-tonk anatomy. The drinking bone's connected to the party bone. The party bone's connected to the staying out all night long. She won't think it's funny and I wind up all alone. And the lonely bone's connected to the drinking bone. Hey, 2 plus 2 is always 4, and down is south and up is north. 32 degrees is freezing cold. You play with fire, you wind up burn. The early bird get burned. But the only thing you really need to know is the drinking bone's connected to the party bone.
But you remember what Coach Daryl Carroll said. It ain't bragging if it's true. Well, having lost 70 pounds and working out as hard as I do and eating right, I'm not saying I'm attractive, but when I take my clothes off in the bathroom, I turn the shower on.
I didn't drink.
Tell if a sniper likes you. He misses you. Did I ever tell you I have a pet termite that I named Clint? Clint Eatswoods. Bit of advice, never throw sodium chloride at someone. That's assault. To get us started, as we always do, I didn't get to this in the first one because I had some heavy on my heart thoughts, a homily, if you will. I'm Southern Baptist, not Catholic, but I had some thoughts I needed to get to. But to get us started, as we always do, usually in the first segment, but today in the second, and that's all right. Courtesy of the greatest executive producer in all the land, Chad Oconee Nakanishi. Your weekend. Is it a fact that if Billy says, I'm a girl, no matter how long his dangler is sticking out from his underwear, he has to be called a girl because he is?
Dangler.
Election day in Harris County was definitely a mess by any account. There were ballot issues. There were problems with voting machines.
The Harris County Republican Party says 21 election judges reported paper ballot shortages at their polls.
I had to shut down my polling station. We had 150 people or so in line.
I had to hear from people that what we were going to do is our side was going to all wait until election day. And on election day, we were going to vote. That way, they wouldn't know how many votes to cheat us with. How did that work out?
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer making a fresh pitch to welcome more illegal immigrants into our country.
Now more than ever, we're short of workers. We have a population that is not reproducing it on its own with the same level that it used to. The only way we're going to have a great future in America is if we welcome and embrace immigrants, the dreamers, and all of them.
Well, we're not reproducing the way we were because of abortion, because of a breakdown in the institution of marriage, because of a number of reasons.
This win for Republicans is the 218th seat. Republicans have now secured a majority in the House of Representatives.
This is a major blow to Democrats as Republicans gain new power to potentially limit President Biden's agenda.
Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy faced a challenge of his own.
Right now, there are a lot of the establishment Republicans in denial, believing that Kevin McCarthy can somehow still become Speaker.
I will tell you, this is a very healthy thing. It should be hard. It should be difficult. He shouldn't be able to cut deals with the Democrats and the establishment without somebody saying, hey, you can't get your votes without us. Yes, 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 it is. And now it is also time for something we do every week that is very important. And that is where we pop a top to someone special. I would pop a top to the mothers and fathers who adopt, to the mothers who give their child life, who choose to pass the custody of a child on to an adoptive parent so that that child can have a life. A mother can make that decision for the best interest of the child, understanding where she is at that point in her life. And I think that should be glorified, applauded. I think that's a difficult decision and a very selfless decision. And I respect and admire it, not only from a selfish perspective, because our children are adopted, but also because I think that that's something that a mother has to, you know, making a difficult decision regarding a child making the decision that is in their best interest can be a very, very hard thing. And it can mean that you suffer a great deal of pain in order to do so. And I deeply, deeply admire the people who do that. I really do. And finally, it is that time for our Papa Top. You know, we here at the Michael Berry Show believe that at the end of a long, hard week of work, a grown-ass man or a Lavesian woman ought to build a Papa Top on a cold beer. And this week, we do so to the people I was referring to in the last segment. And that is every single one of you who worked your tail off during this election. You might not have given millions of dollars like the head of FTX who went bankrupt with his Ponzi scheme to the Democrats, or like George Soros, or the teachers union. But you gave money that was yours. You took it out of your account that you worked hard for, because you understand that well-used money, strategically employed money, can help amplify a message and convince independent voters to vote with your candidate and convince the base to show up and vote. And it can make a big difference. And so you chose to give that which is yours to someone else in hopes that they would use it wisely so that the campaign you want to win, where they will serve, might just do that. No matter how much money it was your money. And you didn't have to. You have to give your tax money. You have to pay the fees and fines and taxes and permits and all that. You don't have to give for a better government, but you did. Those of you who worked on phone banks, who sent mailers, those of you who hosted coffees and teas and events, those of you who block walked and delivered signs, you folks are wonderful. And whether your campaign won or lost, is like I say about veterans who go and serve. Those who died don't come back. We honor them on Memorial Day. Those who do come back, we thank them for their service, but they were all willing to die. Every single one of you did everything you could to help win, and you can't control what your neighbors do and whether they show up and vote and whether the Democrats cheat. But you did everything within your power, and you have no regrets. Like that the old Army All You Can Be of Kellen Winslow being taken off the field after he's played himself into extreme dehydration and blocked two field goals. And Rolf Benerska missed. Well, anyway, that's the old San Diego Chargers stuff.
We here at the Michael Berry Show believe that a grown-ass man or a lesbian woman should be able to pop a cold beer on the drive home on Friday. Pretty good, drinking beer.
Sick of my wife, sick of my future, and sick of my life. Packed up my car and I got some gas. Told everybody they could kiss my ass. I'm going to party town.
You know, as bad as things are, and they're bad, don't get me wrong. Fetterman's brain dead. You know, there's talk of a Joe Biden, John Fetterman ticket in 2024. Biden Fetterman, it's a no-brainer. That would be their motto. As bad as things are, just realize they're getting worse by the day. Just be grateful that most of your life was lived under circumstances better than we're seeing today. It could always be worse, and it will. Someday we'll look back on this, believe it or not, as the good old days.
And now, please give a warm welcome to the 51st President of the United States, Kendall Jenner.
Like, hello, Americans and undocumented Americans. Thank you for voting for me. Like, every man, woman, and non-gendered individual helped make this, like, happen. And just think, it all started several years ago when I, like, with the help of Pepsi Soda, single-handedly stopped racism and sexism, like, everywhere by appearing in a TV commercial with lots of smiling, like, outraged professional models. Like, oh my God, we did so much coke after the shoot that day. Don't do drugs, kids. Like, it's really bad for you.
Pills and getting high. I'm so f***ed out of my mind.
The trimmings is expected to cost 20% more than last year. Nearly every ingredient in the classic Thanksgiving feast is more expensive between inflation, supply chain interruptions, the avian flu. No, really, they blame the avian flu. According to the American Farm Bureau's annual Thanksgiving dinner survey, the survey released Wednesday found the average cost of this year's holiday meal for 10 is $64.05, up from an average of $53.31 last year. It's the most expensive dinner in the 37 years of the Bureau's holiday survey. And then you go on and on. The list, in case you're wondering, is turkey. They call it stuffing. That's dressing, where I come from. Sweet taters, rolls with butter. What kind of rolls do you like, Ramon? You like that Hawaiian one because they got so much sugar in them? Me too. Peas. I can do without peas, but I'll eat them. Cranberries. I don't eat cranberry, do you? Mm-mm. That's your favorite? A veggie tray and ingredients for a pumpkin pie with whipped cream. Why would you ever eat pumpkin pie if pecan pie is an option? I don't know. You know who has a great pecan pie? Good Company. Whoop! A 16-pound turkey costs about $28.96, almost $5, or 21% more than the average cost a year ago, and $9.57 more than back in 2020 when Trump was our president. Holiday staples with the biggest price increases include a 14-ounce bag of cubed stuffing mix, $3.88. Up 69%. Two frozen pie crusts, $3.68, up 26%. A half pint of whipping cream, whipping with H before the W, whipping cream, $2.24, up 26%. A pound of frozen peas, $1.90, up 23%. I'd tell you, don't eat the frozen peas. Keep them in your fridge. And if you have a vasectomy, the doctor will tell you that is the best thing to put on your sack is a pound of frozen peas, because even better than any ice and all that, because I'm always hurt after my workout, my arm always hurts. And Petru always said, just get some frozen peas. And I always forget. And I put the frozen peas on there. Yep. A dozen dinner rolls, $3.73, up 22%. 30-ounce can of pumpkin pie mix, $4.28. Up 18%. But again, I don't understand why you'd eat pumpkin pie instead of pecan pie or any number of other delicious pies. The U.S. government has warned of a possible shortage of big turkeys, Ramon. The U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, said in a call with reporters in early November that finding 20-pound turkeys in some regions could be challenging because of the bird flu. Oh, I'm sure they'll have a vaccine for us all, though. In Joe Biden's America, food costs are through the roof, which I guess is good if you're trying to lose weight.
Did you put on a little too much weight during the fat Donald Trump years? Well, we have America's number one new weight loss plan.
I've tried other fad diets in the past, but nothing beats Joe Biden's starvation diet. I only voted for Joe Biden 3 times in 2020, and I went from 150 pounds to 80 pounds in just 6 months. Joe Biden's starvation plan makes it easy to lose weight fast.
Food shortages, empty shelves, prices you can't afford. Studies show starvation is the fastest way to lose weight.
My 6-month-old baby was getting to be a little chubbers at a hefty 20 pounds. But thanks to Joe Biden's starvation plan, he's down to his birth weight of 8 pounds and 6 ounces. Thanks, Joe Biden.
Remember, you too can take advantage of Joe Biden's starvation diet by voting Democrat early and voting Democrat often.
It may be easier to just do like Ted Alexandro's mama did and buy Boston Market.
I remember last Thanksgiving, I go over to my mom and dad's for traditional Thanksgiving dinner, and my mom orders Boston Market. You believe that? Boston Market. But she served it in her own china. Right? So the guests wouldn't know. But my brothers and sisters and I would drop subtle hints. We'd be like, so mom, do we get 2 sides with the turkey? Is it 2 or is it just the cornbread? What's the policy? She was like, just take what you want and pass it. I was like, you know, can I see your manager? Because I really don't like your attitude at all. And you know, I've been eating here a long time, right?
Celebrating the grown-ass working man and lesbian woman. More Friday Drive Home on the Michael Berry Show.
Love to eat. I love you. Love to eat turkey, cause it's good. Love to eat turkey like a good boy should, cause it's turkey to eat. So good. That clapping's messing my head up, man. I appreciate it, but I was trying to think of the next line. I'm like, all I hear is clapping. Here we go. Thanks anyways. Turkey for me, turkey for you. Let's eat the turkey in my big brown shoe. Love to eat the turkey at the table. I once saw a movie with Betty Grable. Eat that turkey all night long. 50 million Elvis fans can't be wrong. Turkey lurkey do and turkey lurkey dap. I eat that turkey, then I take a nap. Thanksgiving is a special night. Jimmy Walker used to say dynamite. That's right. Turkey with gravy and cranberry. Can't believe the Mets traded that old strawberry. Turkey for you and turkey for me. Can't believe Tyson gave that girl VD. White meat, dark meat, you just can't lose. I fell off my moped and I got a bruise. Turkey in the oven and the buns in the toaster.
On this day in history, were born Herman Rarebell. Is that Rarebell or Rarebell? The drummer for the Scorpions. Born in Schmelz, Germany. Probably Rarebell. If I were to mention the Scorpions, Ramon, how many songs could you think of quickly? Because, by the way, the one that's going to come to mind first, he wrote the lyrics for.
It's early morning, the sun goes out, there's no more shaking.
1953, one of a very talented line of a certain style of comedian who did the Weekend Review, Kevin Nealon. Kevin Nealon, for me, Norm Macdonald is the all-time best. And then there is, especially because Norm Macdonald would rip on O.J. Simpson, even though Lorne Michaels loved O.J. Simpson and kept telling him, you better stop. And finally, he just got fired over it. And it always bothered him, but I always admired him for that.
And the Pope came out with a book this week, which contains a series of essays examining faith and morality in today's secular world and the changing role of the Catholic Church as it approaches the 21st century. The book is entitled, God Himself Told Me That O.J. Is Guilty. In other book news, Prince Charles released an autobiography in which he states that he never loved Princess Di and that his father pressured him to marry her. The book is entitled, Of Course O.J. Did It. I mean, come on. In his book, O.J. Simpson says that he would have taken a bullet or stood in front of a train for Nicole. Man, I'm going to tell you, that is some bad luck when the one guy who would have died for you kills you. That's probably... You don't get worse luck than that.
Anyway, Kevin Nealon born on this day. Look, Kevin Nealon with the real State of the Union.
It's great to be back here in New York City. I'm having a great time. I'm staying in a nice hotel not too far from here. They even put me in the honeymoon suite. Guess it was the only room available. Yeah. Staying with a nice couple from Nebraska. Yeah, getting some nice shots on this trip. Some nice shots. Hey, you got to do what you can, you know, because life is tough. It really is. You got to make an effort. A couple months ago, I raised $37,000 for all the homeless people in America. $37,000. No. Please. I'm not looking for that. Anyway, like I said, life is tough, so I kept most of that money for myself. But I made the effort. That's all I'm saying. See, sometimes we don't appreciate how lucky we are. You know, we don't realize how bad off other people have it. You know what I mean? Even in America, people complain, right? They complain about crime, education. I think the education system is great, just the way it is. There's kids in my neighborhood in Los Angeles, 7 years old, could already speak fluent Spanish. Unbelievable. And I don't know what's going on in the high schools, you know, with the students and the teachers. I saw a bumper sticker. It said, our child is the proud parent of his teacher's baby. What's going on? And crime? Crime now is lower than it's ever been before. Probably because all the good stuff has been stolen already. You know what I mean? I read about these two guys last year. They robbed a bank. They didn't want to be recognized, so they pulled nylon stockings over their heads, you know? Actually, these guys used pantyhose, so they had to walk really close together, you know, when they did it, but they did it. They made the effort. You know what I mean?
On this day in 1963, the first push-button telephone goes into service. I would have thought it was sooner, earlier than that. On this day in 1978, in Jonestown, Guyana, Jim Jones led his People's Temple to a mass murder-suicide that claimed 918 lives in all, 909 of them in Jonestown itself, including over 270 children. Congressman Leo Ryan is murdered by members of the People's Temple hours before this. In fact, that was the moment where they knew they needed to end it all, because once you assassinated the congressman there at the airport as his plane is flying away, you got nowhere to go from there.
This is a Channel 7 News Scene special report with our continuing coverage of the People's Temple story and the murder of Congressman Leo Ryan. Now with the latest details, Van Amberg and Marsha Brandwin.
Good evening. Here's what's happening. We're interrupting our special broadcasting to bring you this special report, an UC news break on the People's Temple mass suicides in Guyana and the murder of Congressman Leo Ryan. I would mention to you now, tonight's movie will run in its entirety immediately following this special report. I also have to warn you as we begin this special report that what you're about to see almost defies description, and some of you may not want to watch it. As soon as these pictures from Jonestown cleared our newsroom, everybody, even a lot of hardened news people, reacted in horror and disbelief. The word on everybody's lips was shades of Auschwitz. These are the first pictures out of Guyana on the incredible orgy of death that took place in the People's Temple Agricultural Mission at Jonestown.
It's that time.
Time.
Lock and load. Show is on the air.
This was in the stack. This is as good a time as any to get to it. It was Fox News the morning after the election, I guess it was. And Kellyanne Conway, who was one of Trump's closest advisors, was talking about a divided Republican Party and that Americans deserve better than that.
Many people want to divide the Republicans. I think we need unity. That is the word of the day. I'm going to continue to call for unity with the Republicans. You know, Bill and Dina, the Democrats were unified last week, but they were unified on how to divide America and scare them into getting to the polls. We had a much better message. We respected the voters more in talking about their top concerns, inflation, crime, immigration, and the rest. And that reaped benefits in some places. We flipped a lot of blue seats. I think states that Obama won twice, like Florida, Ohio, Iowa, are now solidly Republican up and down the ballot. So there's a lot of pockets of good news. You'll see those chief executives meeting in Orlando today talking about how to govern. We will have the House, maybe even by the end of the day, a majority. But all that aside, we need to unify. And unity means you don't have these on-the-record sniping comments from consultants that represent Mitch McConnell and consultants that represent Rick Scott, all of whom I'm sure rate in millions this year, and we're not going to have control of the Senate. You know what, guys? Pick up the phone, walk across the street, and talk to each other. Don't let this spill out into the public, because the voters, Americans, and our democracy deserve better than that. They deserve a party that knows where it stands.
And what she says next is what I've been saying all along.
I think the way we unify is not just on strategy, message, messenger, but it's also on tactics. I think the Democrats have just done a better job investing in what I call the non-sexy parts of politics. Their ballot harvesting, they're banking early votes. Somehow our voters still feel very shy about voting early. Some of them don't trust the machines. Others say, I'm a traditional voter, I go to the polls. Whatever it is, we need to get smart, not just about voter engagement and candidate recruitment, but ballot banking those ballots early. We're taking a chance that Grandpa can get out of the house on election day, or that, you know, any eventuality that can affect any of us. We need to start banking those votes early.
That's exactly right. And when she talks about the non-sexy part of politics, getting our votes to the polls, how about raising and spending money? Listen to this. These are the swing state spending numbers. Now, this does not include PAC money. And PAC money can come in outside to attack the other side or blow up your side. But just listen carefully to this. In the state of Arizona, Mark Kelly raised $73 million. Blake Masters, $9 million. In Nevada, Cortez Masto, $46 million. Laxalt, Republican, $12 million. In New Hampshire, Hassan, $36 million. Her challenger, the Republican, $2 million. Pennsylvania, Fetterman, $52 million. Oz, $37 million. Wow. Georgia, $75 million for Warnock, $32 million for Walker. The closest fundraising was in Pennsylvania, where Fetterman only had 150% the expenditures of Oz. In Arizona, Mark Kelly had 8 times the number of his Republican opponent. In Nevada, 4 times as many. In New Hampshire, 18 times as many. In Georgia, 2.5 times as many. We can't win elections like this. And it's not that we don't raise money. It's that Mitch McConnell spends it on Republicans of his choosing, like in Alaska, where you have to have Lisa Murkowski, that the majority of Republicans refuse to support Lisa Murkowski as opposed to the Republican they want. So they create this ranked choice voting bull so that they can get Lisa Murkowski in there because she's basically everybody's second choice. We don't do that anywhere else. Doesn't make any sense. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. She also had some thoughts on Trump. Take these as you will, but she's been very close to Trump for a long time. She makes a statement that he needs to get back to the underdog status of 2016, that was where Trump was at his best.
And by the way, I think the last point is, I think you'll see President Trump blend a little bit of past president and all these accomplishments that America does miss and did benefit from, and the underdog, underestimated guy from 2016. If he can show that hunger and swagger, not that bloated $1.4 billion boondoggle of a campaign in 2020, but if he's underestimated, the arc of Donald Trump's career in life has been to defy the naysayers and critics, but he knows there are significant headwinds building in some places and spaces. People are upset about last week. I think there's a finger pointing is not really a good exercise, and we should take our wins and build on those.
That's it. You gotta be the underdog, just like Rocky II. You remember how Rocky won the title in Rocky II, and then he got a little full of himself? He started training in a ballroom. Remember, what was his trainer's name? Mickey. Mickey didn't like it. Mick didn't like that at all. He had a crowd full of people. He had bubblegum machines. I'm not bubblegum. He had bubble machines. Bubblegum be good. Hubba bubba. He had a band. He wasn't the same. He gotten too uppity. He lost his edge. And you remember, Mick didn't like it. He didn't like it one bit.
Listen, how the hell can we train in this creek joint here? I mean, this is kind of a house of ill repute or something, is it? Why did you rent this joint?
Oh, come on, Mickey. Let's go out in style, okay?
You ain't going to stop all in one piece. Now, come on. Let's get out of here. Let's go back to the old gym, will you? Let's get some blood and sweat and tears around here. Can we do that?
Hey, will you just relax and enjoy it all, okay? They love it, Mick.
That's what Kellyanne is. Get back to the basics. Then the FBI raided his home. Remember, that got him all fired up. Just like when Clubber Lang started taking the sweet talk to Adrian. You remember that?
Hey, woman. Listen here. Since your old man ain't got no heart, maybe you'd like to see a real man. I bet you stay up late every night dreaming you had a real man, don't you? I tell you what, bring your pretty little self over to my apartment tonight, and I'll show you a real man. You want it? You get out!
You don't talk to Adrian like that. That got Rocky fired up. Shut up, Ramon. I know Rocky lost the fight to Clubber Lang. I'm well aware of what happened, okay? Just play along. We're talking about fighting as the underdog, okay? And then I will remind you, Rocky went on to ultimately beat Clubber Lang once he got the Eye of the Tiger. That's what Republicans need. We need to fight like underdogs. We're going to win big, red wave. Forget that. Fight like the underdog. You got to have that eye of the tiger. You got to knock them out.
Place if every grown-ass man and lesbian woman popped the top on the drive home? You bet it would. It's the Friday Drive Home on the Michael Berry Show.
Mm-hmm.
table, eating them beans and making love as long as I am able.
I feel pressure on Friday to get to stories that are kind of timely, that have been in my stack, but I've never had a chance to get to them. And there's a reason I want to get to this story, and it's not because of the story itself. You might have seen this. An actor who's also a comedian was the sign language interpreter on Broadway for The Lion King. And he has been removed from that role, supposedly because he's white. And he's filed a discrimination lawsuit. His name is Keith Wan. He's 53. And he has claimed that back in late March, he was hired to work as a sign language interpreter on The Lion King. And I guess it pays pretty well. It paid him $1,000 per performance. Not bad. But a few days later, he claims that he was asked to, quote, back out of interpreting the show, end quote, after officials with the nonprofit Theater Development Fund, which arranges for the interpreters to work on Broadway, determined that it was no longer appropriate to have white interpreters sign on behalf of black characters. The organization wanted black interpreters to assume the roles instead. According to emails included in the lawsuit, Wan was told by Lisa Carling, the director of Theater Development Fund's accessibility programs, that he was no longer welcome on the show. With great embarrassment and apologies, she wrote to Wan and his fellow interpreter, Christina Mosley, I'm asking you both to please back out of interpreting the show for us on Sunday, April 24th. I don't see any other way out of this. It seems like the best solution. Well, wait a minute. The idea that a white person couldn't sign for a deaf audience for a black person, if there is a difference in the way black people and white people talk, and there can be, I guess, depending on where you're from, maybe, I'll play along. In sign language, is it different? Does a black sign language interpreter sign differently than a white person? Do they pick up on the jive, or what's going on there? That reminds me of the old Chappelle bit. Ramon, see if you have Clarence Bigsby, the Clayton Bigsby. Yes, right, Clayton Bigsby, the black Klans member, black blind Klans member, and the joke as the audience is, you know, he's black and he doesn't because he's blind.
For viewers sensitive to issues of race, be advised that the following piece contains gratuitous use of the N-word. And by N-word, I mean... There, I said it. For the last 15 years, a man named Clayton Bigsby has been the leading voice of the white supremacist movement in America. Though not sold in any major bookstores, his books, Dump Truck, Stain, I Smell, and... book have sold over 600,000 copies combined. Despite his popularity, very few have ever seen him due to his reclusiveness, but in an effort to bring his message to a wider audience, he agreed to give his first public interview ever to Frontline. But getting to Mr. Bigsby was an odyssey in itself, riddled with backcountry hollers, shifty go-betweens, and palpable danger.
Excuse me, not sure we're in the right place. We're looking for Clayton Bigsby.
Look no further, fella. You found me.
Clayton Bigsby, the author?
What, you don't think I can write them books? Just because I'm blind don't mean I'm dumb.
How could this have happened? A black white supremacist. Our search for answers led us here to the Wexler Home for the Blind, where Mr. Bigsby spent the first 19 years of his life. Bridget Wexler is the home's headmistress.
Well, he was the only we'd ever had around here, so we figured we'd make it easier on Clayton by just telling him and all the other blind kids that he was white.
And we never questioned it.
And since we're on the subject of The Lion King, the reason I originally wanted to play this is there is a wonderful story that you may not have known. All right, so it took me a while to get to the point here, but this guy was getting $1,000 per performance to sign. That's pretty darn good money. I mean, and it's The Lion King. One of the all-time greatest musicals on Broadway by any statistical measure. I mean, you have to figure he was real excited. He called his mama, "Mama, I'm going to be signing for The Lion King." "Oh, son, that's wonderful. Your husband's, your dad's got chemo, but he'll be done in 4 weeks. We'll be there 5 weeks from now to watch you do it." And then he finds out, no, I'm too white to sign for. Okay. I mean, you know, she called all her friends down at the Ladies Guild of the church so she could crow about her boy. "You know, I don't mean to brag nor nothing, but Keith got this gig. Look what he's going to be doing." You know, she was so proud. You know, she dropped it into every conversation. "Did I tell you about my boy Keith? He's working on Broadway. You walking around like George Jefferson, just peacocking all about town, singing The Circle of Life when she's buying her groceries down at the HEB. I don't know if they have HEB where she lives, Ramon. I'm telling a story. "Shut up. I'm painting a picture here. At the grocery store. But if you don't give the name of it, like Tom Waits said, if you don't give the name, it ain't any good." So it reminds me of this story, which is why I wanted to tell this, is there's a Marine, United States Marine, and he would sing The Circle of Life to Taliban prisoners to taunt them. And we have the audio. And of course, you're going to hear it. And I'd love to shake this man's hand.
"This is Lion King, Circle of Life, Lance Corporal Downs, and Haji Ben Bad Guy. Take one."
Look at that bearing.
He's having too much fun.
"From the day we arrived on the planet, and blinking we step into the sun, there's more to see."
He sings all the roles. I love it.
"Seen more to do. They can ever be done. Ningin' in my body is far too much to take in. Ningin' them or to bound. More can ever be bound. But with the sun rolling high in the sapphire sky, he take it far on the endless ground with the circle of life. Till we find our grace.
Bravo.
For the path of hiding in the circle."
He's enjoying this way too much.
"The circle of life."
Of life. Go on the record, sir. Tell us what you thought. There you have it.
"Baby, this here's a stir of success. Brought up in Orange, Texas, broke ass poor. Scholarship his way to 2 law degrees, including one from Her Majesty the Queen of England. Elected 3 or 4 times. A lawyer, a husband, a father, but most of all, an ignorant ass. Fasten your seatbelt. Pop your cold when you get ready for more of Mr. Michael Berry, honey."
"All around me are accusing faces, staring faces, doubting faces. Wish that I was in a different place. I might have messed up. Might have messed up. Had it all planned out, I'd be a martyr. Jussie Smollett, Joan of Arc of our times. heard somebody stretched them up like trumpkins, bought some bleach and a noose and a subway sandwich.
It's amazing how these things keep coming up. Remember when we were told there was a noose in the garage of Bubba Wallace, the only black NASCAR driver, and it turned out, no, it was just the rope to pull down the top. And remember when Jussie claimed that a noose was put around his neck 2 o'clock in the morning when he went looking for a footlong in the freezing cold subway, and he claimed two MAGA white dudes did this to him in downtown Chicago? Well, CNN has discovered a noose at the Obama Presidential Center, and this has prompted an investigation.
Construction temporarily halted on the Obama Presidential Center in Chicago after a noose was found at the site. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker condemning the hateful act, tweeting, quote, "The noose is more than a symbol of racism. It is a heart-stopping reminder of the violence and terror inflicted on black Americans for centuries." Lakeside Alliance, a joint venture of construction companies working on the center, said in a statement it reported the incident to police and have a, quote, "zero tolerance for any form of bias or hate on our work site." The Chicago Police Department says it is investigating the matter. The Obama Foundation released a statement writing, quote, "This shameless act of cowardice and hate is designed to get attention and divide us.
My experience in Chicago made me believe in the power of place and the power of people."
This is not the first setback the project has faced since it was announced in 2015. It was slowed by lawsuits and complaints from the community. Environmentalists brought a lawsuit to prevent the center from using Jackson Park, taking issue with public land use for a private project. A federal judge dismissed the suit in 2019.
"The substantial investment in the South Side will help make the neighborhood where we call home a destination for the entire world."
The project will be run by the Obama Foundation, breaking with all other presidential libraries, which are run by the National Archives. The Obama Presidential Center finally broke ground last September.
"We are about to break ground on what will be the world's premier institution for developing civic leaders across fields, across disciplines, and yes, across the political spectrum."
And there is a reward on the table to the tune of $100,000. That is for information leading to the arrest of the person or group responsible for placing that alleged noose on this construction site. Still unclear where it was exactly found on, and it's also unclear when construction will resume here.
Have you noticed that the left keeps perpetuating this idea that black folk are being lynched by right-wingers in this country? According to the Washington Post, there has not been a recorded lynching in the U.S. since 1981. That's 41 years ago. Last time there was a noose sighting in Chicago was when Jussie Smollett was assaulted by two men telling him it was MAGA country, and then they placed a noose around his neck. Remember? Except that story wasn't true. Jussie hired two men, black dudes, by the way, from the bathhouse, and staged the entire thing, but that didn't stop him from crying on television.
"I was talking to a friend, and I said, I just want them to find them. And she said, sweetie, they're not going to find them. That just made me so angry, because so I'm just going to be left here with this."
Then we had the Bubba Wallace noose sighting. If you question that the noose was the doings of some white supremacist, then you were a simple-minded racist. NASCAR bent over backward to virtue signal. Remember? Just like the NFL, the NBA, and Major League Baseball. Here was Tucker on that story.
"From the beginning, there were a few who expressed public skepticism. Might this be a misunderstanding? Bubba Wallace, who never produced pictures of the noose, had a message for anyone who questioned his story. They were stupid and they were racist."
"What would you say to those people who are doubting that this even happened or that it's true?"
Yeah, just like Steve Phelps said, it offends me that people would go to those measures. But again, I'm not shocked. It's simple-minded people like that, the ones that are afraid of change. They use everything in their power to defend what they stand up for. And instead of trying to listen and understand.
Well, the FBI bought the story completely. They've done nothing to arrest the people who are burning police stations or tearing down monuments of George Washington. But the FBI sent 15 agents to Alabama to investigate the noose. And after days of investigation, they discovered the noose was in fact a rope with a loop used by work crews to pull down a garage door. One of these nooses was present in every garage at Talladega. Once again, authorities rushed in to believe an absurd story because it could be used to advance a political agenda.
Turns out the noose was just a garage door pull. Not a lynching noose at all. The media will wring their hands and cry over the racism involved in this alleged noose when it turns out wasn't a noose at all. And the media will never say my bad. They'll just move on. They won't even apologize for it the way NASCAR did.
And now, a very important announcement from the CEO of NASCAR.
Hello, I'd like to speak to all the stock car fans out there, and this week we accused you all of being racist. We suggested our fans were stupid Confederate flag-waving neo-Nazis, and on Monday we had a parade to celebrate our disdain for you. It turns out we were wrong. You're not racist. We overreacted. Sorry about that. Please don't let this deter you from sending us more money. We need it. Thanks.
It's another work week in the books. Getting you geared up for the weekend. It's the Friday Drive Home on the Michael Berry Show.
Save enough time for Rush to be able to complete his remarks here. We didn't play this when Rush was alive because Rush could do it himself. But it only feels right upon his passing to remember the great one, and this is the time to do it. Rush Limbaugh on the meaning of Thanksgiving.
The true story of Thanksgiving. The story of the pilgrims begins in the early part of the 17th century. The Church of England under King James I was persecuting anyone and everyone who did not recognize its absolute civil and spiritual authority. Those who challenged ecclesiastical authority and those who believed strongly in freedom of worship were hunted down, imprisoned, and sometimes executed for their beliefs. A group of separatists first fled to Holland and established a community. After 11 years, about 40 of them agreed to make a perilous journey to the New World, where they would certainly face hardships, but could live and worship God according to the dictates of their own consciences. On August 1st, 1620, the Mayflower set sail. It carried a total of 102 passengers, including 40 pilgrims led by William Bradford. On the journey, Bradford set up an agreement, a contract, that established just and equal laws for all members of the new community, irrespective of their religious beliefs. Where did the revolutionary ideas expressed in the Mayflower Compact come from? They came from the Bible. The pilgrims were a people completely steeped in the lessons of the Old and New Testaments. They looked to the ancient Israelites for their example. And because of the biblical precedent set forth in Scripture, they never doubted that their experiment would work. But it was no pleasure cruise. The journey to the New World was a long and arduous one, and when the pilgrims landed in New England in November, they found, according to Bradford's detailed journal, a cold, barren, desolate wilderness. There were no friends to greet them, he wrote. There were no houses to shelter them. There were no inns where they could refresh themselves, and the sacrifice that they had made for freedom was just beginning. During the first winter, half the pilgrims, including Bradford's own wife, died of either starvation, sickness, or exposure. When spring finally came, Indians taught the settlers how to plant corn, fish for cod, and skin beavers for coats. Life improved for the pilgrims, but they did not yet prosper. And this is important to understand because this is where modern American history lessons often end. Thanksgiving is actually explained in some textbooks as a holiday for which the pilgrims gave thanks to the Indians for saving their lives, rather than as a devout expression of gratitude grounded in the tradition of both the Old and New Testaments. Here's the part that's been omitted. The original contract the pilgrims had entered into with their merchant sponsors in London called for everything they produced to go into a common store, and each member of the community was entitled to one common share. All of the land that they cleared and the houses they built belonged to the community as well. And they were going to distribute it equally. All the land they cleared, the houses they built, belonged to the community. Nobody owned anything. They just had a share in it. It was a commune. It was the forerunner to the communes we saw in the 60s and 70s out in California. And it was complete with organic vegetables even, just like the communes of today are. No, there's no question it was organic vegetables. Bradford, who had become the new governor of the colony, recognized that this form of collectivism was as costly and destructive to the pilgrims as that first harsh winter, which had taken so many lives. He decided to take bold action. Bradford assigned a plot of land to each family to work and manage, thus turning loose the power of the marketplace. Long before Karl Marx was even born, the pilgrims had discovered and experimented with what could only be described as socialism. And what happened? It didn't work. They nearly starved. It never has worked. What Bradford and his community found was that the most creative and industrious people had no incentive to work any harder than anybody else, unless they could utilize the power of personal motivation. But while most of the rest of the world has been experimenting with socialism for well over 100 years, trying to refine it, perfect it, and reinvent it, the pilgrims decided early on to scrap it permanently. What Bradford wrote about this social experiment should be in every school child's history lesson. If it were, we might prevent such needless suffering in the future, such as that we are enduring now. The experience that we had in this common course and condition, this is Bradford, the experience we had in this common course and condition tried Sunday years, that by taking away property and bringing community into a commonwealth would make them happy and flourishing, as if they were wiser than God, Bradford wrote. For this community, so far as it was found to breed much confusion and discontent and retard much employment that would have been to their benefit and comfort. For young men that were most able and fit for labor and service did repine that they should spend their time and strength to work for other men's wives and children without being paid for it. That was thought injustice. Why should you work for other people when you can't work for yourself? What's the point? That's what he was saying. The pilgrims found that people could not be expected to do their best work without incentive. So what did Bradford's community try next? They unharnessed the power of good, old, free enterprise by invoking the undergirding capitalistic principle of private property. Every family was assigned its own plot of land to work and permitted to market its own crops and products. What was the result? Bradford wrote, "This had very good success, for it made all hands industrious, so as much more corn was planted than otherwise would have been." Is it possible that supply-side economics could have existed before the 1980s? Yes. Read the story of Joseph and Pharaoh in Genesis 41. Following Joseph's suggestion, Pharaoh reduced the tax on Egyptians to 20% during the 7 years of plenty, and the earth brought forth in heaps. Well, in no time, the pilgrims found that they had more food than they could eat themselves. Now, this is where it gets really good. If you're laboring under the misconception that I was, as I was taught in school, they set up trading posts. They exchanged goods with the Indians. The profits allowed them to pay off their debts to the merchants in London. And the success and the prosperity of the Plymouth settlement attracted more Europeans and began what came to be known as the Great Puritan Migration. But this story stops when the Indians taught the newly arrived suffering and socialism pilgrims how to plant corn and fish for cod. That's where the original Thanksgiving story stops. The story basically doesn't even begin there. The real story of Thanksgiving is William Bradford giving thanks to God for the guidance and the inspiration to set up a thriving colony that socialism caused near starvation. The bounty was shared with the Indians. They did sit down. They did have free-range turkey and organic vegetables. But it wasn't the Indians who saved the day. It was capitalism and scripture which saved the day, as acknowledged by George Washington in his first Thanksgiving proclamation in 1789.
If you like the Michael Berry Show and podcast, please tell one friend. And if you're so inclined, write a nice review of our podcast. Comments, suggestions, questions, and interest in being a corporate sponsor and partner can be communicated directly to the show at our email address, michael@michaelberryshow.com, or simply by clicking on our website, michaelberryshow.com. The Michael Berry Show and podcast is produced by Ramon Robles, the King of Ding. Executive producer is Chad Nakanishi. Brad Gloria is the Baron of Booking for guests and provides voices. Jim Mudd is the creative director. Script writer, parody producer, and Lord of Laughter is Kenny Webster Jr., a.k.a. Producer Kenny. Voices, jingles, tomfoolery, and shenanigans are provided by Chance McLean. Director of research is Sandy Peterson. Listener and superfan contributions are appreciated and often incorporated into our production. Where possible, we give credit. Where not, we take all the credit for ourselves. God bless the memory of Rush Limbaugh. Long live Elvis. Be a simple man, like Lynyrd Skynyrd told you, and God bless America. Finally, if you know a veteran suffering from PTSD, call Camp Hope at 877-717-PTSD, and a combat veteran will answer the phone to provide free counseling.